Welcome to Worlds Apart. An old Chinese saying suggests that it's better to be a dog in times of tranquility than a human in times of change. A proposition that many of us may test out soon as the world we knew just a few years ago rapidly disintegrates. What is likely to emerge in its place? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Wang Wen, Executive Dean of the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies. Dr. Wen, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Chinese scholars are not known for their excessively dramatic assessments, but I noticed a lot of them, including yourself, warning about the danger of a major war, perhaps even a global war involving nuclear weapons. What made you reach such an ominous conclusion?
So actually, in my opinion, the conflict now is escalating, because with the increase of the military assistance from the United States and NATO to Ukraine, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine is no longer a regional power, but is escalating into a Russian military struggle against the whole Western world, especially NATO. So I believe in Russia's will of the war. So if the Western pressure continues to increase, Russia can only be forced to use nuclear weapons. So this is what I'm very worried about. I'm also hope to resume negotiations between Russia and Ukraine and end the conflict as soon as possible. Otherwise, I think mankind will face a more dangerous moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the so-called Asia-Pacific pivot in the Biden administration and in the previous ones as well. They tried to extricate themselves painfully and sometimes very clumsily from the Middle East, from Afghanistan, only to be embroiled in Europe. Do you think this picking up of a fight with Russia over Ukraine was deliberate, or has the West essentially stumbled into this conflict?
In my opinion, Russia was forced to launch this special military operation, because Ukraine has written its accessions to NATO into its constitution. And if Ukraine finally joined NATO, it means that Russia's security interests are under unprecedented threat from the West. Mm-hmm. So Russia's earlier start action is better than later start. So this is a very, very important reason why many Chinese sympathized with and support Russia. In the eyes of many Chinese, mm-hmm. Russia has been threatened by the West for a long time and has to fight back. So this is why in China nowadays, many, many Chinese people, they sympathize and support Russia.
But I know from your articles that many in China also sympathize very strongly with the people of Ukraine and their suffering. And I have to say that many Russians are too very, very greatly pained by that. But you once described Ukraine as having the body of a strong man and the fate of a servant girl, and as gender insensitive or politically incorrect it may sound to a Western ear, I think it's hard to deny, given how poorly Ukraine has been able to benefit from both its strategic position and its natural resources. And I think to some extent it's very similar to Afghanistan, because Afghanistan is centrally located within Eurasian continent. It has very rich resources, but all of that did it more harm than good. Whose fault is that, both in the case of Ukraine and perhaps even in the case of Afghanistan?
When we study the international relations theory, it is often said that the tragedy of the greater powers, but in fact, there are a lot of tragedies in those middle-sized countries or small-sized countries. For Ukraine, because Ukraine has a very, very good resources, And we call, that's why I call the Ukraine as a very strong body. But the problem is that if those countries, media size or small size, cannot balance its relationship with the other big countries, it may become a tragedy, become a dependent or victims of the big powers game. So Ukraine's best strategy positioning should be to become a bridge between the Eastern and the Western civilizations, but not a servant ghost, as I said, of the United States and NATO, none a tool for the West to suppress the East or Russia. So I think nowadays, the Ukraine's positioning is very wrong, which makes it the biggest loser of the conflict. So that's why I'm very worried about the Ukraine, because maybe in the future, after the conflict, Ukraine may become the poorest and the worst country in Europe.
Now, you said before that you essentially believe that Russia was pushed into this military operation by NATO's continuing encroachment, and Vladimir Putin, who authorized this operation, his last visit abroad was to China, and it was very interesting, in my view, visit, because the Russian delegation flew in the morning, they had a day full of meetings, and they left in the evening, and there must have been something very, very important in those personal meetings to justify, you know, traveling such large distances for such a short period of time. Do you think the Chinese were informed of the Russian intentions to launch this operation? I know that there is no way of knowing it for sure. Perhaps only President Xi and President Putin know that, but what's your intuition on that?
Till now, we still very appreciated President Putin's visiting to Beijing at the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympic. Of course, this is a very, very event for China.
But it wasn't just celebrations, right? I mean, there were some important talks behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, but to be honestly, I asked the questions to a lot of China officials. And I needed an answer whether that time President Putin tell or share the information, a secret information to China side. But now I'm very, very concerned that China does not know the information that Russia would launch these special military actions this time. Because in fact, you know, a very, very obvious evidence is that until the day before the outbreak of the conflict, the Chinese foreign ministry still did not ask the Chinese embassy in Ukraine to quit, right? So this has proved that China does not know the truth. So that's why I said some Chinese people complained about this, why you didn't ask me that she had information. But on the other hand, we can understand it because we believe that Russia is an independent country and has a right to do what it think it is right.
Now, despite this ambiguity on whether or not China was informed about Russia's intentions, I think we would agree that even before this military operation, the relationship between Russia and China was growing closer over the last couple of months. I think it became even tighter. And while the Chinese side is still trying to project a neutral line, you know, projecting that neutral line in and of itself is a sign of independence. It's not siding explicitly with the American hegemon. Do you think that is intentional?
So I think actually China will not follow the U.S. to section Russia, because in fact, nowadays, in the world, 80% of the countries and the population have not followed the West to section Russia. The West was isolated by the world in these sections against Russia. In China views, sections cannot solve any problems, but will only harm or wounded or hurt the interest of ordinary people. China has always opposed American hegemony, but We support the international orders since World War II. Because in many Chinese views, the largest country that has undermined the international order established since World War II is the United States. Because the United States continue to withdraw from many treaties, provoke wars, and become the global troublemaker.
Now, Dr. Wen, for now, the active fighting is still contained to Ukraine, and we all hope that it will stay that way, although the ripple effects from this confrontation are already felt around the world. What could possibly make the hostilities spread further and turn this military operation from a local or regional one into, you know, a global outbreak of violence?
Because I don't know whether you know, last week President Xi put forward a very interesting new term. It's called a Global Security Initiative. Because this initiative, I think, is very, very important. It's called for the concept of common, comprehensive, cooperative, and sustainable security. So I think that China nowadays, we push the Global Security Initiative. It's very, very valuable in the context of the realistic power politics. So nowadays, we Chinese, we want to push the international systems to adhere to the UN Charter, abandon the Cold War mentality, and oppose the unilateralism, and refrain from group politics and camp confrontations. So I think this is China's wisdom. This is China's suggestions.
Now, you mentioned President Xi, and he was also talking about humanity being this one big ship and having to face crashing waves together. He said that throwing anyone overboard would present a major problem for, you know, everybody. But I think it's a beautiful, very Chinese metaphor. But do you think the Americans, who are clearly intent on sinking Russia, I mean, they're not hiding it. They want to, you know, push Russia underwater. Do you think the Americans are likely, you know, to listen, to perceive that that view from China?
We hope American can listen. Can listen and can hear. Because in the Chinese concept of the security, human beings are on the same ship. And now mankind is facing a very dangerous moment. Because one of my articles said, nowadays we have the virus, we have the infection, we have the climate change and food shortage and wars. The five aspects are happening at the same time. So now the human rights, it's the human being in a very dangerous moment. So now we need to be done is to unite mankind, not just focus on the interest of their own countries. In the whole, because you can imagine the whole universe, the Earth is very, very small. And in the Earth, any country is also very, very small. But, and now some countries, especially in the US, are too arrogant and often want to lead the world, but are not good at uniting the others. So if this continues, it will be punished by the history.
Okay, well, Professor Wen, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Since the breakaway of the Donetsk People's Republic, war's been raging in Donbass. Ukrainian artillery's been shelling civilian towns and mining villages there.
Прильот! Вот, дым возле нас прилетело. Прильот! Вот он, прильот! Ну что, вы видели все своими глазами. Прилетело буквально 50 метров от нас, взорвалось Д-30. Слава богу, осколки не в нас полетели. Валим.
World Apart with Wang Wen, Executive Dean of the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies. Dr. Wen, you're a very serious scholar, but in one of your articles speaking about this growing danger of a global war, you mentioned the curious and some would say grim numerical coincidence that the sum of every two digits of the starting dates of World War One, 28th of July 1914, World War II, the 1st of September 1939, and the Russian-Ukrainian conflict, 24th of February 2022, are the same. They all go down to number five. And I know that traditional Chinese philosophy assigns a lot of significance to numerology, but I wonder if you yourself see any meaning in this peculiar coincidence.
Thank you for your reading my articles, because actually my undergraduate major is history. Mm. I like to look for lessons in history that can be a user for the reference in the future. And actually, because it's a very coincidence of these numbers, makes us more alert to the danger of this war. Because if as I said, if this continues, the Third World War is not impossible. Because the Chinese tradition often teach us that presuming peace and if preferring war, it will bring destruction. So nowadays, it's very obvious that the United States is like to push the war or prefer wars. And Russia also, I think, should learn from this experience. Mm-hmm. So nowadays, I suggest the best way is to still to stop the war as soon as possible.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there is another Chinese saying that suggests that the best war is the war not fought. And obviously, the Chinese tried to navigate their relationship with the United States the best they can. You wrote yourself that for now, at least, you have been able to avoid falling into a Cold War trap. Do you think that there's still a danger when it comes to the United States and China? Or do you think the conflict with Russia, this indirect conflict with Russia so far, will keep Washington busy for a couple of years?
I'm very worried about it. Very, very worried about it. Because if we look at the history, the military actions could have been avoided if the NATO did not continue to push the Eastern world expansion, or if the United States did not provoke the regional tensions, or if the Ukraine did not try to join the NATO. However, it's very, very clear that the history could not be repeated. Mm-hmm. So now that the tragedy has happened, and the best way to remedy is to stop the war as soon as possible, as I said, and it has more humanitarian actions and save the life of the civilian who should not die and reduce unnecessary losses.
Now, I'm very aware that the Chinese don't like this comparison of the Ukrainian situation to that of Taiwan because of Beijing's insistence on the one China policy. But I'm sure you know that President Biden, the Biden administration, and the other administrations too, have promised their support for Taipei. In view of how Ukraine was treated by the American security-wise, the fact that they have essentially been you know, abandoned in the time of great need. Do you think those promises of American support are worth anything?
Yeah, in China, you know, a lot of people, they think that now the United States is trying to provoke another war in Taiwan in the way of the Ukraine, because we think in some United States Security Department or security scholar, they think that in Europe, the U.S. use Ukraine to balance Russia and weaken Russia at the same time the Europe. And this is very, very, very smart way. And because they think in Asia, United States can use the same way to balance Chinese mainland with Taiwan and weaken the China rise through the new war. So this idea is very, very dangerous and selfish, because the United States will sacrifice the lives of the Taiwanese people again, just as they sacrificed the lives of the Ukrainians. So Taiwan is regarded as an agent of the United States to contain the rise of the Chinese mainland. This is another political tragedy. So we have to concern about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking about Ukraine, it's well known that Ukraine is one of the world's leading exporters of agricultural goods. And as you wrote recently, more than 14 countries are more than 25% dependent on Ukrainian wheat imports. I'm sure the Russians are keenly aware of their own responsibility before the third countries. They do, you know, especially those who are dependent on the Ukrainian exports. But do you think realistically it is now within Russia's ability to ensure that the spring sowing season begins as it should and that it continues as it should, so that to minimize the burden on the rest of the world? Because in addition to this war, we also have, you know, many seasons of droughts, you know, locust invasions and many other factors that are affecting the production of food.
So actually, in a lot of the Chinese people's views that China's Russia's special military operations are very concerned about relevant humanitarian responsibility rather than blindly military attacks. Because this is a very, very important reason for Russia slow military promotions, because Russia military very concerned about the Ukraine ordinary people, as well as you are talking about those spring sowing season elements. Because and also China has put forward 6 points of humanitarian initiation to protect ordinary people in Ukraine. So now the whole world is worried about the war. It's superimposing with COVID-19, and a worse green shortage will be possible. So we have to concern about the other countries.
Washington, for now at least, seems to believe that in penalizing Russia, you know, any means justify the goal. And, you know, it already led to steep increases in commodity prices. It forced many companies to alter production change. Do you think that the world is likely to take it as it is? You know, the might is always right. Or do you think it may provoke some counter reaction from other countries to make the Americans to force the Americans to understand that, you know, it's not okay to force others to carry the burden of their decisions? They may take whatever actions they deem necessary against the Russians without, you know, forcing other countries to do the same.
Actually, more and more people, not only in China, but also in a lot of countries, they believe that the most selfish country is the United States. Because what the U.S. care about most is how to defeat its enemy or its opponents. So as far as the problem of the civilian casualty in target country or injury to the third countries when defeating the opponents, Americans don't care. So, for example, in Iraq or in Afghanistan, we all deeply feel the cruelty of the United States. Because, as I said, sanctions will not solve any problems.
But Dr. Wen, I think you would agree that many countries, I mean, I've heard it from lots of my guests from around the world, they all believe that the Americans have demonstrated selfish behavior, but up until recently, very few countries had any diplomatic or economic or even political force to resist that behavior. Do you think that momentum may be building to something more productive right now? For example, I know there are lots of talks about China and Saudi Arabia, you know, an old American ally switching to yuan-denominated trade in oil. Do you think, you know, such indirect moves can not even challenge the American hegemony? It's not about challenging the American hegemony, but making the world more balanced and more secure, so to say, and not to depend on the will of one country.
I think there will be a very important financial change after this conflict. That is de-dollarization. Because by excluding Russia banks from the SWIFT, the U.S. actually regards the commonwealth of the human financial civilization as an external weapon. So which is very unfair or very incorrect. So every country will think as that. Because in the past, we trusted the dollar. But now, you, United States, use the dollar as a weapon. Do we need to trust the dollar again? So over the years, we can see more and more countries have abandoned the dollar. 20 years ago, for example, the portion of the United States dollar, US dollar, as a reserve currency in the international monetary system was still 77%. It's very, very high. But now it has dropped it to the 58%. So it will be lower and lower in the future. So in fact, I think the hegemony of the United States and also the hegemony of the dollar is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm. It's coming to an end as we see the rising prominence of China and other countries, including and their currencies as well. And, you know, one of the, it's a sort of philosophical question, but one of the expressions we hear a lot in the international discourse is who is on the right side of history and who is on the wrong side of history, which I have to say is a very Western, I would even say a very Christian concept, you know, dividing everything in starkly good or bad terms. As China continues its natural rise to prominence, do you think it will introduce a more complex understanding of what is good or what is bad and what's the balance between, you know, various opposites?
I think if the war didn't break out in Europe, there might not be so much attention. Because, you know, in Africa, in a lot of developing countries, there are still many regional conflicts or the local war, but few Western media report them. So, for example, even in Afghanistan or in Iraq, the U.S. still left many war legacies and wounds, but the Western media did not report in time very often. So at present, I think that the American media should occupy the international voice and the Western, I call it Western centrism, is still the mainstream. This you mentioned about the discourse. And we need to presume, so that's why I think we need to presume the greater global equality and the international democratization.
Well, Dr. Wen, we have to leave it here. Thank you very much for your insights today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.